Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, and social critic. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. We invite your calls and story to 781-3875. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Better than last week.
Better
you were getting a cold.
Week. Yeah. I still got a little bit one, but I feel much better.
I'm glad.
Got a lot of... Baby slept 8 hours for the first time ever last night.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
That's a good day.
So I feel good even with a little cold.
It was a Mother's Day gift for Emily.
Yes.
How was the day yesterday?
It was,
or was it Sunday?
Yeah, it feels like yesterday. It was exhausting.
It was exhausting for you.
Yeah, it was my first Mother's Day as a father. And I always thought it was a lot of work for Mother's Day. And then now I realized it's a lot more work.
So what's the difference between Mother's Day for your own mother and Mother's Day for the wife of your child?
I've got to provide.
Or the mother of your child.
I've got, instead of just giving Mother's Day gifts for me, I have to give them from me and the baby, basically.
That's true.
Work
That's
for
true.
Two to provide a good Mother's Day.
And so what was your trick?
The trick? I don't know if it was a trick. I just busted my butt all day.
So you did all the child care and mommy care, or what did you focus on to be most helpful?
I did as much housework and food preparation and as much baby help as I could. And he's still breastfeeding, so I couldn't do that. But everything else I tried to help out with.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like it was a really nice day for everybody involved because you get to appreciate how much work goes into just the care and tending every day. And Emily got a day to see you caring and tending, and I'm sure she felt really supported.
I hope so. She seemed like it, yeah.
Well, she'll call and let us know if she didn't.
She did.
Well, we welcome your calls today at 782-781-3875. It's a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I was listening to the little tag at the front about my various roles of wife, mom, eavesdropper, which I love because I'm constantly listening to other people's conversations to see what goes on for them. And emotion worker, which we're going to talk about today. What is that exactly? And my experience of kind of grappling with all of those things that we all tend to grapple with in our lives, but rarely get an opportunity to talk about it, which is really the premise of our show week to week, is that Brian and I come together and we have this forum for sharing what it is to be a human in our culture. What is it to try to navigate all the complexities of our life and our relationships and our love and our feelings, and how do we support each other in that journey? Because there are a lot of groups for learning how to do better in business, and you can go to college and we can learn how to work on our careers, and we talk openly about our struggles financially. Maybe not struggles financially, but we talk about how we're all working hard to succeed and do our best. But we rarely have a forum where we can just talk about what it is to be a feeling person, a caring person. And so that's what we do every week. And we invite your calls and input on whatever topic we're talking about, or if something else is going on for you that you want to share with our community and get some support or feedback, I'm always happy to hear that story. But this week, I, of course, am thinking about motherhood, because not just because of Mother's Day, but a lot of things that have been going on in my life. And I recognize myself primarily as a wife and mom. I have two girls. You know, my oldest is going to be 27 in June.
Mm-hmm.
She's getting married in August. It's very exciting. So my family's expanding. And then my youngest is 16 and finishing up her junior year in high school. So they're two very different places in their life, and they each bring their own joys and challenges. For Mother's Day, I traditionally like to be alone, which sometimes I think can cause sour feelings for my kids who probably would like, you know, me to hang out with them all day when they were younger. And I think some other moms might think that it's a little strange that I just like the day to kind of hang out. When the kids were little, I loved my husband to take them for the day and just to have my house be clean and to sit with my feet up. But now this, as the kids have gotten older, we'd go play tennis or, you know, do stuff that I kind of enjoy doing, and then have some time alone. So it's a good balance. But Sunday, I decided I wanted to go up to Lopez Lake. Have you been up there?
I have, not for many years, actually, but I used to go up all the time as a kid. And in high school, we'd drive up there to go to the water slides.
Oh, absolutely, Mustang Waterslides. Well, it was pretty crowded at the lake. A lot of moms were getting their Mother's Day picnics at the lake. And we have a little sailboat, so I decided, you know, let's go up and just float around because it's been so cold at our house that I wanted to get some warmth and read the paper and just float around. So while Chris and Kelly were setting up the sailboat, I took off on my bike and thought I'd just ride around the lake and check things out. So I rode around. If anyone's been to Lopez, there is a point where you can kind of ride to the other side. And as I was coming back from the other coming back on my ride around the bottom of the lake, over in the corner of my eye, I saw a family on horses on the other side, probably, you know, 100 yards away from me, and a dog kind of running in the marsh between us. And then I look again and I realize, oh, no, that's not a dog. That's a bear.
Oh, wow.
That is a huge bear, reddish brown bear. And as I had ridden on my bike and the horses came, the bear somehow got startled, or I don't know what he was doing prior to me seeing him. Mm-hmm. But he came up out of the marsh, huge, looked at me. I looked at him, and then he turned and started running away. But realized, of course, the horses are there. So the man and his family start yelling and riding. And I just rode my bike. Long story short, I ended up finding a ranger who threw my bike in the back of the truck. And we ran around, and the man on horseback came tearing around to make sure I was okay. It was all in the community. And then I rode my bike back to my husband, who had the boat waiting, saying, okay, we've been waiting for you. And I said, I got to see a bear for my Mother's Day gift. It was quite something.
Wow.
I know. So that was my Mother's Day story. But I was also thinking yesterday just about the whole role of motherhood in our culture. And because I teach in the psychology department at Cal Poly, I teach family psychology, and we talk about the changing role of motherhood. And things have changed quite drastically, you know, in the last 50 to 100 years. I mean, really drastically in the last 40 years. But so in my lifetime, in my parenting lifetime, motherhood has changed quite a bit. But it's also changed dramatically since the turn of the century, not this one, but the previous century. Prior to that, you know, families were pretty connected, that men and women shared a lot more of the duties, especially agrarian families, families that lived on farms. You know, it was really a group effort where fathers were, you know, mentoring their sons and teaching them their jobs, and moms were helping out on the farm and teaching their daughters, and the families really worked as a unit. But around the turn of the century and the Industrial Revolution, you know, for the first time, men were actually leaving in droves for the whole day to go to work, which really changed the family dynamic, where women were taking on much more of the roles of parenting and men were becoming more disconnected from the family unit. And we saw that disconnect happening, you know, through World War II, when we had a huge disconnect in families. And after World War II, when families kind of came back together, when the war effort was successful, then we had a lot of people now moving out into the suburbs. We had this great migration away from family units, extended families like the Waltons all lived together, at least in the same community or in the same apartment building, much closer together. But after World War II, we had this, you know, influx of wealth and this desire for individuation and individuality. So families kind of moved into the suburbs. And then men were going off to work and women were home, and it became kind of this very separate experience of women being in charge of the kids and men being in charge of money. And then, of course, with the feminist movement at the late 70s, everybody was going out the door to go to work. Women were, you know, done with the separation of being at home and men working, and we wanted to have more equality. So we've had these kind of steps in the course of our families over the last 100 or so years that have really changed the role of not just moms, but also parents. And I think one of the things that I see has happened is that one is the focus on mothers being to blame for things that go wrong in the family. There's a lot of mother blame in the culture. And also for women, I think there's this real conflictual feeling between wanting to nurture and care for and stay with our children and raise them, you know, be there as much as we can, but also this pressure to get out there into the working world and to pursue a career or pursue work. Or also financially, a lot of families have found that they have to have two incomes to keep it together. So things have really transitioned. And I think along the way, what's happened is we, in some ways, pathologized the experience of motherhood. Do you know what I mean by that?
Not quite.
Okay.
I'm saying, because pathology to me means the study of a disease.
Right, looking at something as illness or unhealthy, right. A disease. Because, well, I know in my profession has a lot to do with this, I think, because back in the 60s, 50s and 60s, when we were talking about motherhood, and let's talk about schizophrenia to start. When they started studying schizophrenia and what were some of the causes of schizophrenia, mm-hmm. one of the first theories that stayed for quite a long time was that young men, primarily young men who were schizophrenic, became schizophrenic because of poor mothering. So that was one of the first flags that went up that said, you know, mothers are to blame for things that go wrong in their children. Right. And then along that same time, when they were talking about what were the characteristics of the ideal person, you know, our diagnostic statistical manual, the DSM, Diagnostic Statistical Manual, mm-hmm. The way that we define, you know, mental health in our culture, it also appeared, you know, right around World War II. And the foundation of the DSM was to define what is a healthy and mature and functioning individual. But if you look at what the characteristics are of a functioning, healthy individual, they tend to be very sterile, you know, fairly unemotional, balanced, assertive, strong, you know, clear thinking, fairly unemotional. You know, those are what we look for when someone is functioning well, able to perform their job, able to be in relationship, you know, very straightforward, almost a job description. What you don't see and what we started to see at that time was the characteristics like nurturing, supporting, feeling, emotional, tending to, characteristics that used to be identified primarily with feminine qualities were seen as being weak and vulnerable, and that these were qualities that we didn't really necessarily want to nurture in anyone because they were considered not appropriate for the workplace or not something that were going to push us forward and help us be successful. So those characteristics that had traditionally been associated with motherhood or mothering started to look like they were a liability, that no one wanted to be seen as being too nurturing or too supportive or too soft. And so a lot of people were pushed and encouraged through psychology, through therapy, through the cultural message that if you want to be successful, you want to be stronger, you don't want to be soft, you know, the people that are succeeding are out there making it happen. And so there's these two things that happen for motherhood around the same time. One is that everything that's happening to our children is blamed on the mother, starting with schizophrenia and then also all behavior habits. And we've seen that continue. And then the other piece is that those characteristics that were generally really valued in a mother started to be seen as weak and something that we don't want to have. So I don't know, Brian. I think that motherhood is a challenge, not only because it's a lot of work, as you're learning and your family's learning, but also because in our culture, we're not really supporting what it takes to be nurturing. We're not really allowing women and men to fully embrace all of those mothering characteristics that make our family such a joy to be a part of. It's just my thought today. What do you think?
Well, I think that you're onto something. That there's not many stay-at-home moms that I know of. Almost every mother that I know has to be a working mom. And I don't know if that's because society dictates that or because the economy's so bad, but definitely notice that mothers are going away from being basically the home stayers, home carers, and home workers, and having to get out in the work field and make that more important than the family. I don't know if that's the case, but
because I don't think, and that's why I don't believe that anyone ever feels that anything's more important than the family, yeah. I mean, right? Because if you talk to anyone who's a parent, that's our primary concern. But I do think that there's, you know, I think it's tough to stay home full time financially. I think it's tough emotionally to stay home full time because it can feel very isolating. There's very little support for stay-at-home moms. And again, I think because it's so daunting, there's so much pressure on raising children that I think it'd be difficult to say, I want to take that job on, you know, that to be willing to actually say, I want to be the primary person with a child, because there's so many ways that you can feel like you failed that I think it's hard to take it on. I don't know. I mean, and honestly, I don't think I'm a great mom. I look back at my life and in what I'm doing now, you know, I think I'm good at this. I have to keep reminding myself why it's so important. I don't know if being a mother was my primary language. If my husband and I'd really thought about it when we first had our oldest daughter, we might have swapped roles, because I think part of he might have been actually better at the staying at home, nurturing everybody piece than I was. I've had to grow and learn a lot of lessons, many lessons over the 27 years I've been doing this. And I had to kind of surrender in some ways to the flow of being a mom. And that's when it became really beautiful experience. I know some great moms who it just kind of came naturally to them. And I always envied them a little bit. It's their ability to just be with their children and love being with their children and never think twice about it. I had many more struggles with it along the way, I think. I don't regret any of it. I always worked, 10 hours a week. So I felt like I had this hobby energy outside of being a mom that was so necessary for me. But I think that it's been a struggle all the way through to keep kind of fighting the noise of the culture that I need to be doing more, that just being home with my kids isn't enough, that I'm wasting my college degree if I'm not working full time. And then I would always think, well, what other use would my college degree be for than to nurture another person? I don't know. So what are your thoughts out there? We're talking about the role of being a mom and motherhood in general for men and women in our culture. How did we get to this place where it's so daunting for mothers? You know, there's a lot of blame put on mothers for everything that goes wrong. We're too close, or we're too distant, or we're too nurturing, or we're too strict, we're too permissive. We don't have enough boundaries, or we have too many boundaries. We lack attachment with our children, or we're too attached. You know, no matter where we tend to go with our parenting, if our children are struggling, it usually falls back on the moms. But when our children are doing well, we tend to say, well, it's our child's innate strength or abilities. So we only really take credit when our kids are in trouble. But when our kids do well, most times we just push it away. What are your thoughts? You can join our conversation at 805-781-3875. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We'll be right back to take your calls.
That number again is 781-3875, area code 805-781-3875. Here's a highlight from the KCBX community calendar. There will be a community forum entitled Ending the Silence. It's on promoting better understanding of mental illness next Tuesday evening in the community room of the San Luis Obispo Library. For all the details, go to the community calendar at kcbx.org. Coming up at 3 o'clock, it's Fresh Air with Terry Gross. Then at 4 o'clock, American Public Media's Marketplace. And at 4:30, All Things Considered from NPR News. The number to call in and speak with Elizabeth Barrett, the Reluctant Therapist, is 781-3875.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you can always get in touch with us by calling in 781-3875 during the show. We also have a Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Love to hear from you. And I am getting a lot of pressure from those who love and support me that I need to expand my social media presence and look into tweeting and Tumblr and different things. So I think over the next few months, you may see the Reluctant Therapist spreading out a little different in different directions, more directions. But it's funny because when I think about that, it makes me tired. My life is super busy, like everyone's life is super busy. I'm trying to be a teacher and trying to do the show, which I love, and taking care of my family, which I always say is my primary job. And it seems like, you know, along this path of parenting, you feel like you've always, or I felt like I'd always hit the hardest part. You know, I was so nervous when I was pregnant. I couldn't imagine giving birth to this human being and what I was going to do about this. And I thought that's the hardest part of parenting, is giving birth. And then, of course, taking care of a newborn and what goes into that, and being up all these hours and not getting enough sleep, and thinking, okay, this has got to be the hardest part of parenting. Now I'm going to slide. And it just continued, raising toddlers, and the fact that toddlers never stay safe. They're always running towards danger. You know, when you put a child down, once they learn to walk, why do they always run towards the street? I don't know. So I was exhausted raising my toddlers, loved every minute of it, but I was exhausted. Thought that's got to be the hardest part. But no, it just continues, you know. And now with a teenager, you know, this has a whole different level of exhaustion, because it's an emotional exhaustion. There's a lot of physical tiredness that goes into raising young children. But you get into those teen years, and there's a lot of conflicting things that are happening. They're supposed to be pushing away, finding their own place in the world. At the same time, they still need our guidance and support. So finding that balance of supporting your teen and guiding your teen and not getting your feelings hurt when they want to do their own thing. I struggle with that. You know, it makes me feel sad a lot of times that my role is changing. And I didn't really experience it as much with my oldest daughter, who's going to be 27, because I still had an 8-year-old at home and my husband and I were still so busy. But now with my younger daughter, you know, getting ready to finish her junior year and has her driver's license now, I'm starting to feel a new transition again. So my job as a mom is changing and I'm trying to find my way with that. It's an interesting journey. Hi, Melina, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Yes. No, you know, I am a mom of two little girls. One is 20 months and the other one is 6. And I am a stay-at-home mom. I am a professional, an attorney from Argentina. And, you know, it's very hard, challenging. But all I would like to say is that if we can see them, the kids, as somebody else different than us, that gives us an opportunity to grow and to reflect on them, our own maybe needs, things that we never solved when we were young. And if we also trust our intuition with things, for what is the best for them?
I think you bring up a great point, Melina, because the trusting our intuition is something that's difficult to do, because don't you find there's a lot of pressure and noise? There's books and articles and...
That's what I say. You know, well, if we stop, I mean, we should listen everything we want to listen, read everything we want to read. But in the end, I think the strength is in connecting with ourselves and our own intuition. Because there's so much out there that then we end up being a piece of each person outside. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think. I have a multicultural couple. My husband is Asian, raising kids like myself, but in a different country, with no background from my own culture. So it's a challenge that we, all the moms, need to go back to themselves and really search, and they will have the answers, I think.
I love that wisdom, and I think it is true. I think that we, over time, have been kind of seduced into thinking that the newest ideas or the latest ideas, you know, are the best ideas. But seems to me, you know, when I started to kind of give into the flow of motherhood, when I stopped fighting it very, you know, when my oldest daughter was about 5, I remember kind of settling in and thinking, there's no other place I really need to be in my life but here. And when I finally settled in and just trusted that this was my job and this was my place, things started to make more sense. It didn't get easier. You know, the job was still the job, but it made more sense.
And drains you emotionally, and they will take as much as you can give.
Yes.
So it's non-stopping. It's not that there will be a limit, like a stop, okay, here they don't need anymore. They will always need. And your husband needs. Everybody needs from us. So find something that we love to stay balanced, that we can refuel ourselves. And then just try to live as happy as we can.
Absolutely. To every day find something to be joyful about. I appreciate you calling in and sharing your story, Melina, and enjoy those babies.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening.
Okay.
And this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We're talking about motherhood and some of the challenges and some of the joys. How did we get to where we are parenting? You know, it's interesting because I see for some of the young moms that I work with and that I know that there has been another great shift. I talked about earlier, you know, about the split between men and women that happened kind of the time that I was coming into adulthood in the late 70s, during the 80s, when divorce was peaking. And, you know, there was this real kind of battle between the sexes, and both men and women were out there fighting for their careers. And the idea of being a stay-at-home mom or staying home with children just felt really unpalatable, and that no one really wanted that job because our focus was on success, and how we measured success for us individually and as a culture was how much money we brought in financially. And you know, as time has passed, because my girls are so far apart, I've kind of had this benefit of parenting in two different generations. This second group of parents that I've been raising children with are starting to really make that move back towards each other, to creating partnerships. Kind of the way you talk about, Brian, about you and Emily, it's more of a partnership. You see your child rearing as something you're doing together, and that you're both equally involved with the nurturing and caretaking. And, you know, you may not realize this, but that's a real switch back in some ways, and just also a new way of accepting our roles as parents.
It's just something that I wish I could be there 24 hours a day taking care of him, helping do everything, but I have to pay rent. So. Yeah.
Well, you know, we talk about emotion work and resource work, and that's, again, kind of my tag at the top of the show, is that I'm an emotion worker. Then we look at families in balance. Some, you know, there has to be the resources to take care of the family, so we have to work or bring in money somehow, have a roof over our head, have food and the necessities that our family needs. But equally as important, we found as social scientists, is the emotion work, that there needs to be someone focusing on the mental health and well-being of the family, you know, listening to everybody's story. As Melina was talking about, you know, everyone will need and need and need. There's a lot of growing that has to happen, from kissing stubbed toes to rubbing backs when friendships fall apart, or, you know, not getting a class you want, or boyfriend breakups. You know, there's a lot of need in families for that emotional support. And that's not maybe just for your children, but also for your parents and your siblings. And one of the things that's been really difficult is to find the time for the emotion work in families. Because if we're all putting our heads down and going for the resources, and it takes both people to keep the resources coming in, then it's very difficult to have the energy or find the energy to do the emotion work in the family. We tend to get home and hope that someone else is there to rub our back or rub our feet or ask how our day was. And I found that one of the biggest struggles for me and my husband is, you know, we were kind of figuring this out over the years. Was that I needed to find value in what I brought to the family. You know, that I needed to feel like my contribution as the emotion worker and kind of keeping our social calendar and making sure we were all connected had value. And fortunately, my husband was really great about always recognizing my part of the family and my contribution. And I don't know if that's true for everyone or if we see it for ourselves. I don't know. What do you think? We're talking about motherhood. We're talking about what it is to make decisions for our lives. Will we stay home full time? Will we continue to pursue our career? Do you feel pressure to do one or the other? How do you keep it all together on a daily basis? Whose story are you living day to day? Is this your story, or are you just kind of following the cultural norm? Our number is 805-781-3875. It's a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, talking to Brian about parenting and motherhood. We'll be right back to take your calls.
The number again to call in and speak with Elizabeth is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. Coming up at 3 o'clock in just about a half an hour on the next Fresh Air, we hear about the new film Frances Ha with director Noah Baumbach and actress Greta Gerwig. It's about a young woman struggling toward adulthood in New York City. Gerwig also starred opposite Ben Stiller in Baumbach's previous films, Greenberg, and rock critic Ken Tucker will review Stories Don't End. It's the third album by the rock band Dawes. Join us at 3 o'clock for Fresh Air. The number again to call and speak with the reluctant therapist is 781-3875. That's 781-3875.
You know, Brian, in some ways I think this is a really difficult topic to talk about. Maybe it's why it's kind of quiet today, because it's very controversial. You know, I was putting together my notes, and you and I were talking about it before we started today, and I kind of had this long explanation wanting to talk about how we shifted away from valuing, nurturing, and caregiving and supporting in our culture, and kind of wanted to move more towards everyone being individualistic and isolated and autonomous. And, you know, both of those are really important skills for us to have. But I feel like that we split into this dichotomy in our culture between, you know, it's okay to want to drive towards success and go towards a career and, you know, be assertive. But if you want to nurture and take care of and support, that's considered a more weak skill and not really suited for worker bees in our culture. I think it's tough to talk about because, and especially when I talk to my circle of women friends, because we all have had different paths. You know, some of us stayed home. Some of my friends have been career resource workers. Some have done both. We talk about a lot of the choices and compromises we had to make in our life, but it's tough to talk about without someone maybe feeling hurt or feeling offended. I think for women, you know, there's been a lot of conflict within our own gender where women feel at odds with each other for whatever choices they are making. And again, it goes back to that whole idea of mother blame, that no matter how we're mothering, how we're choosing to be in our family, you know, if our children are doing well, then we figure it's just because we had great kids. But when our children are struggling, then we tend to blame the mothers, you know, no matter what that is. If they're working moms and they're not paying enough attention, or they're, you know, not attached enough. And if you're a stay-at-home mom, you're too attached and too enmeshed. And that makes me sad. It makes me sad that it's difficult to have the conversation. It makes me sad that I'm kind of struggling to find the right way to put my feelings into words, because I don't want anyone to be hurt or offended or feel like I'm judging their choices, because I can really only talk from my place and my experience. You know, I can only talk from what I've seen in my 27 years of parenting and experienced being mothered by my mom. But to be honest, I feel conflicted. Part of me feels excited because I see so many young couples like you making these choices to really parent in a partnership, and you've made choices so that you can, you know, have your life set up so that financially, you know, Emily can be home. And that's such a gift, and it's happening a lot of places. But the cultural message, you know, although in pockets of places, and I think San Luis Obispo is a pocket, mm-hmm. and in pockets of places, we see people kind of taking charge of their life and not listening to the noise of culture and doing what they believe is in the best interest of their family. But for a lot of, you know, our country, a lot of our society, a lot of different places, there's a lot more pressure to just follow the noise of the media, you know, that you should be doing it all. You should be working full time. You should be parenting full time. You should have the perfect marriage. Don't forget, you need to have a hot body and work out all the time. And that is so much to do that I think a lot of people shut down. They might assume that everyone else is doing it well, then they're the only ones that are failing or feeling like they're failing. I think a lot of women, and probably men too, carry a lot of sense of inadequacy, that you're not quite doing anything really well ever, and that feels really frustrating. And this is a place we can talk about that, I hope. But as I said, I think that we hesitate to say it out loud because we don't want to offend anyone else. Sammy, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I'm not a mother, but my sister is, and she was particularly a very young mother when she had her first child. She was 20, and now she has two adorable little boys. They are almost 6 and 4. Anyway, I do worry about her because I think being such a young mother, oftentimes she doesn't get the respect she deserves as a mother. For example, her in-laws are really, they don't respect her, especially when it comes to her wishes for feeding her children. She really does this amazing job of trying to feed them well and not like, give them a lot of sweets, and they don't respect her in that regard. That's just an example, but she really struggles, and she has kind of a passive personality. She's not good at speaking up for herself, but at the same time, she is very defensive of her kids. And I was just wondering if you had any advice for her, or any advice for me for how I might support her in her role as mother.
That's such a great question, because I think parenting has a real isolating feeling about it because we do find ourselves having to defend a lot of our choices, and especially young moms are considered, you know, to have less knowledge or less life experience, and so it's easier to boss them around. I know that my sister-in-law, when she first had her kids, and she wasn't a young mom, but she was a new mom, and so I think she felt a lot of pressure because all of us in the family had opinions. And so I think the greatest thing you can do, the greatest gift we can do for anyone, is to continually support the efforts and to remind her how great she is and notice that the kids are doing so well, and to remind her that, you know, she's making a choice for her children that she'll never regret, and to continue providing that support. Because what I found as a mom when my kids were young and all the way through is that I didn't necessarily need someone to come in and take over the job for me because it was hard. And I didn't need to go to work full time to get away from the house because it was hard. I really just needed the support. I needed my husband to remember, to remind me that I was doing this, you know, good job. And I needed to be reminded that this was of value. And that's all I really needed to keep moving forward. And I think that's the best gift you can give to your sister. And I appreciate even having the understanding that it is a struggle for her, and to maybe reach out and keep telling her that she's amazing.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that is part of the issue, too, is that her husband, he doesn't do a great job of standing up to his family when they are kind of, you know, degrading her work, her amazing work as a mother, you know. So I think that really is at the heart of the issue, that she doesn't have that support from really the person who matters most. She absolutely has our support.
And I think that'll help. And I think maybe at some point she'll have to put a little card under her husband's pillow and say, you know, honey, I love parenting with you, but I need this backup. And maybe when she can whisper it in his ear, things will make a shift, because those things really matter and help. And I appreciate you calling in to share your story, Sammy. Have a great day.
Thank you so much. Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're talking about motherhood, mother blame, the struggles of motherhood, or how amazing motherhood is, because it's all those things. It's all those things. No one gets an easy path. It's a lot of work for all of us. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. 781-3875. Hi, Rhonda. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi. Actually, quite a few things.
Okay.
This has been an issue that I thought of even as a young girl, whether I wanted to work outside of the home or be a stay-at-home mom, because my mom did work outside of the home. She had to for financial reasons, and my dad did as well. So my little brother and I oftentimes found ourselves raising ourselves. And or being forced to go to babysitters' houses, which was never fun. You never wanted to do that. You wanted to be at home where you felt secure. So when I did get pregnant, my husband and I decided that I would stay at home with our daughter, and that was 12 years ago. And the struggle that I've seen being a stay-at-home mom have been unreal. Just from people, the caller before me hit the nail right on the head. Mm-hmm. Disrespect. Mm-hmm. If you are a stay-at-home mom, you're lazy. You don't want to work. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go. I mean, this is, believe it or not, these are the things people would say to me. Why don't you want to work outside of the home? Why do you make things financially more difficult on your family? And my husband's family was a really big one who would just constantly hammer on us. Life would be so much easier if Rhonda used her degree and did something outside of the home and made money. Why do you guys make things difficult on yourself, on yourselves? And to us, we weren't making things difficult on ourselves. We were raising our children. One of us was there at all times for our kids. And for society to tell me that I am a bad person for choosing this is awful. And then in the same token, I'm being told, you need to work outside the home, but you need to be a full-time mom too. And you need to do both.
And I think that's the real, I think you've hit the nail on that head too, is that I think a lot of women feel the pressure to do both things at once and to do them well. And we never talk about the opportunity of maybe looking at our life as a series of seasons, you know, that maybe there's a season of parenting and then there's a season of working full time out of the house. And maybe while we're parenting, we're working outside of the house more creatively. I don't think we'd look at enough different ways to live our lives. And I think that people who are making choices, you know, are needing the confirmation that their choice is right by picking at other people who aren't making the same choice, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Well, I look at women, friends of mine that work outside of the home and then come home and have to raise their kids as well, and I just, hats off to them. I respect that so, so much. And there have been times these 12 years that I've stayed at home that I've wanted to pound my head against something. I'm so tired of being at home all the time. But in the end, I have two really awesome kids, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. And we've made this choice to not go out to the movies, to not go on vacations, to, you know, to live minimalistically so that one of us could be with our kids. Some people don't have the choice to do that.
No.
And I understand that, but when society is walking around pointing their fingers at the moms who do work outside the home and saying, you're not good enough, and then looking at the moms who stay at home and say, guess what, you're not good enough either.
Yeah.
What are we supposed to do? I don't understand, but yet men can come and go as they please, mm-hmm. and that's okay as long as they're bringing home a paycheck.
Right.
That's all they've got to do.
Right.
So it's really, I don't know, I just think being a mom is the hardest job in the world, whether you're a stay-at-home mom or you're a working mom. This is a tough job, and society just needs to leave us alone.
Cut us some slack.
Cut the mom's sorry.
No, Rhonda, I appreciate
it. I just needed to stand up for both the stay-at-home moms and the working moms because, darn it, we're doing the best we can.
You are. And Rhonda, right on for calling in and having your say, because there's a lot of moms out there right now saying, yeah, I'm feeling the same feelings. But if we never get to have our say, it can be a really lonely, quiet ride being a mom. And so
absolutely.
I thank you. Thank you for calling in and sharing your story.
Thanks so much.
Enjoy your day.
Thanks. You too.
And you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, talking about motherhood, the trials and tribulations, how do we make it all work? I think that my sister is on the phone because she is going to call in with a perspective that, I don't know, either will go along with mine or will totally counter it. Sister Katie.
Oh, hi, sister.
So I wondered if you would call today because my sister is a full-time working mama of two. How do you make it all work?
Well, I'm calling you. One of the things is I have a hands-free, you know, car phone, so I can make personal calls or business calls in my car while I'm driving to carpool. But mostly, I'd like to say I really appreciate the last caller, appreciating moms in all areas because some people do have to work. But I liked your point. I want to comment on your point about the emotion work and the resource work, because I think we need to talk about that more and help us defend ourselves or stand up for ourselves in raising our children, whether it's the man or the woman, because I do have some good friends that the man's home most of the time with the kids and his wife is, you know, the mom is out working all the time. And as long as someone's home, you know, with the kids and available, I think that's how I've made it work with my husband, is that he has a demanding job for about 4 months of the year, but the rest of the time, he has a lot of time to be home with the kids, so I have more time those months to work more, and then the months that he's not, I'm home with the kids. But on a day-to-day basis, I have to tell you that as my kids are getting older, with a 12-and-a-half-year-old, my time from 8 to 10 at night, the emotion work is a lot of time, and I don't have any time for other stuff, and I don't know how people do Facebook or anything else, because I'm with my kids and I have to talk to them and be there and listen, and that's when I'm getting my emotion work done. And it doesn't happen between 9 and 12 when I'm at work at my office because they're at school, but it happens at night. And I think that's my advice, and I like the emotion work to put that out there and say that's a big part of my day and I need to make space for that and be healthy and happy so when I'm home at night I can be there for my kids, because as they get older, that's what they need.
It is.
I still,
No, I think you're right. And I'm glad you reminded me about the emotion resource work, because I think we're talking almost about a more global issue, that we don't value nurturing, supporting, caring for. If we don't value that as a society, then how do we know that that's missing in our parenting? Because I think for some families, they believe that if they're, you know, getting the money in the house and their kids have all the sports and doing all the activities, that they're doing enough. We don't talk about the importance of sitting and hearing our children's stories, or teaching our children to be empathic, or teaching our children conversation skills, how we need to model making friendships, how we have to model for our children interpersonal connection by being with our husbands and, you know, talking quietly and sharing intimate moments. You know, those softer emotions, we call them, those softer feelings, we have to model them and share them. Otherwise, we run the risk of being robotic, which is ironic because as we speed down the road towards much more technology overtaking our lives in an effort to simplify our life, we're almost becoming as robotic in our interactions as our lifestyles tend to, you know, are on the running the risk of being. And the thing that's tough is that to talk about these things, to say, hey, maybe, you know, we need to pull back and get in touch with our inner humanity more. We need to teach our children these human skills and these loving skills and tending skills. But if we talk about that too much, then we start sounding like old timers who are rejecting technology. And so we don't want to become irrelevant. You know, it's a tough place.
Yeah. I feel like every day or every season, like you said, but even in raising the kids, there's times where I pretty much want to be home full time with my kids. And so I juggle work so that when they have their preschool or school or whatever, that I'm at work when they're at school. But my priority is the kids. But now it's not just about feeding them and taking care of them. It's all this emotional work, and it takes a lot of time. And I don't think I'm worried, and I would support people to cut back their hours, because it takes a lot of time and energy to be there for our kids. And I know that we need to put more time into raising our kids and really carving that out in your day more. That's how I feel for me. I mean, that's my perspective. So
thank you for calling in, sister.
All right. Well, thanks for your advice. I did want to compliment my sister's advice over the years. For sure has saved me. And there were times as a young mom where I felt nervous around my big sister, but I also needed your advice all the time, and I appreciated it. And so thank you. Thanks for spreading the word and getting people talking.
Thanks for calling in. I'll talk to you soon, sister.
Bye.
You are listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We're talking about motherhood from lots of different perspectives. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we'd love to hear from you. We have about 15 more minutes, 781-3875. We'll be right back to speak with Virginia and Tally. Hang on the line.
That number again is 781-3875, area code 805-781-3875. We have closer to 10 minutes to get some calls in, so we could get a few more of you in. Coming up in at the top of the hour at 3 o'clock, it's Fresh Air with Terry Gross. Then at 4 o'clock, American Public Media's Marketplace. Call now, 781-3875. This is The Reluctant Therapist on KCBX.
And if you'd like to get in touch with us off the air, we do have a Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, and you can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Always love to hear from you. Love to see you on Facebook. You can also listen to previous shows and broadcasts by visiting kcbx.org under the Program Archives tab, and you can stay connected to The Reluctant Therapist in many ways. Hey, Virginia, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is, we've just passed Mother's Day, and one thing I would say about my mother is she was always home by 3 o'clock. She helped our father in his business, and when my brother would get home from school, his friends would be with him because their mothers had to work, say, to pay the rent, and Mother didn't have to do that, but she was their mother, and they loved her. And so those stay-at-home moms, or those moms who are home in the afternoon, have a very important place in our lives. So I'm starting to cry a little bit.
I can hear that in your voice. It's really important to you.
It is. So I guess that's about all I have to say. Both of my parents, I'm a little bit of each of them, of course, and they were both there for us.
That's so beautifully said, Regina. I think there's a lot of people feeling the same feelings right now, and I appreciate you taking the time to call in today.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Have a great day.
Okay, bye-bye.
We're talking about motherhood, and I hear the emotion in Regina's voice. I feel the same way because I think there's a lot of, it takes a village, as Hillary Clinton said, it takes a lot of people to nurture and raise our children. And I think one of the difficult tasks is that we expect mothers to do this in isolation, that we're expected to have all the answers and know what to do and be there 24/7 and be the be-all, end-all for our children, and also, you know, feel this pressure to be pursuing work or career or bettering who we are at all times. And, you know, I find that daunting. I find it overwhelming to think about all the expectations on women in our culture and in men in our culture, because as I mentioned earlier, you know, there's been a lot of pressure on men to move their feelings aside, their nurturing, their wanting to be part of the family 24/7, a lot of pressure on men to, you know, be strong and assertive and independent and autonomous. But it's all of our nature as human beings to want to care for and love each other and be a part of each other's lives. And I guess I just keep thinking, you know, at what point do we question the whole picture? At what point do we question everything we're doing as a culture, not just point at individual moms and dads and people and how they're choosing to live their lives, but is our cultural story supporting what really matters in our lives? Because I don't think anyone's going to call and say, well, kids will raise themselves. I'm going to focus on my job. I don't think that's anyone's truth, but I don't think our cultural story supports what we instinctively want, which is to be connected to others. And I think that pressure to be successful in financial and monetary ways really overwhelms our ability to do the things that we feel we need to be doing. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Sally, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi there. I just love you. Thank you so much for your service. And I've had this, I think I've done this a few times in the past on my own, but I'm listening to you and I'm hearing the pain of people calling in. They're so brave. I'd like to start a movement, you know, a little bit of a consciousness, if we could just say a comment to the mothers out there. But before what I'm suggesting or my idea, I'd like to say that I was part of the first wave of women that should be benefiting from the feminist movement.
Mm-hmm.
I was co-nurtured, I would say, I won't say co-parented, by a number, a few people that were some of the movers and shakers in the humanist psychology movement, people that started up at Esalen,
mm-hmm.
Different fields of psychology. And so I was very conscious from a young adolescent about the feminist issues and the responsibility of parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
And for myself, I'm college educated, and I had always planned to be a part-time worker at home, what my degree was in, so that I could work at home part-time. And I was engaged for a number of years to three different individuals. The relationships didn't work out. They were like during college, early work entry times. And it was like just too early. So it didn't work out. And I wanted to make sure that I had someone that could be, you know, a provider as well. And I wanted to make sure that they met a level of responsibility because I was so conscious of parenting.
Mm-hmm.
So my life ended up being mothering in different situations. So siblings, my mom, people that had illnesses in my family, people that came into my life. So I've seen and I still do it currently, my mothering, and that goes on. But what I really want to say is there's a war against women. Mm-hmm. And you know, I never really have spoken out about it. I'm in the middle of a huge lawsuit for myself where I'm experiencing it. The show on PBS last night about the women in the military, you know, trying to make claims of rape. And we need to realize that there's an attack against women out there. As nasty as that is to say, it exists. It is real. I'd like everyone to, when you're in public, when you see a woman that's a mother, turn to her, smile at her, and say, thank you for your service to society.
Hmm.
Because that woman is putting out energy to bring into a productive person that's going to be part of the collective, that's going to affect us. And we need to start honoring that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a woman. What about another person that, you know, a man that's, you know, raising a child, what have you? You know, this is a huge job, bringing a human into society. And we need to honor them, and there should never be a woman calling in that says she's being criticized, you know, for not working. I mean, that's just crazy. It's her choice. It was she had the financial means to make a choice of having a lower standard of living to be able to carry out her values.
Sally, I love what you're saying, because I think the idea of taking the time to thank any other individual for the efforts that they're putting into their family and into caring and nurturing for other people, that could start a movement. If we really put as much value on the emotion work as we did on the resource work, we could turn things and really have women and other mothers, people who are mothering, because I also loved what you said about your role in mothering those in your life, your own mother and nieces and nephews and siblings, because mothering comes in a lot of forms. If you picture mothering, it is this nurturing, caring for, tending to, not just others, but to animals and to the earth. We have to start embracing the whole attitude of mothering in other ways. I really appreciate your call. Hi, Kathy, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh. Hello?
Hi, are you there, Kathy?
Yes, it is. Hi there.
Hi.
My question is from the other side of the coin. I have a 30-year-old daughter who is a type A personality and an outstanding mother, doing a beautiful job of raising two children who are, you know, a little over 2 and 9 months. The problem is, she seems to resent absolutely any input or suggestions or even, you know, benign conversation, and takes it out of the criticism of her childbearing. And I'm wondering if this is because she's getting so much grief from everybody else and is hypersensitive and feels like she can lash out at me because she knows I love her, mm-hmm. you know, like teenagers tend to do. Mm-hmm. Is this what's happening now, or where is this anger towards her own mother coming from? If I make a minor suggestion, and immediately back off if there's resistance.
I think it's a great point, Kathy, and I'm glad you called in, because I don't think it's just to you. I think because there's so much information all the time, and it's conflicting information on the internet and books and the media on what it is to be a mom or how we're supposed to parent. And, you know, I think that's what makes it such a challenge for young moms today, because in some ways, you know, the idea is that our type of parenting, yours and mine, is dated and doesn't work anymore. And so there's a new wave of how to be a mom. So we've kind of lost our respect, you know, in some ways in our younger culture. I think the other piece is what you said, that there's a lot of criticism and pressure all the time to do everything right, and that it's easy to feel very isolated. I wish I had a quick and easy answer, but I think just saying things out loud and being able to talk about it and share these concerns and issues with each other is one way we get started. And I'm sorry that things have come to a close so quickly, because I would love to talk about this forever. I know that it won't be the last time we talk about motherhood and mothering in our culture or emotion work, but please feel free to continue the conversation on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I appreciate everyone taking the time to call in, and I look forward to continuing the conversation right here on Public Radio KCBX. Brian, have a good week.
Thanks, you too.